So we're beginning classes on Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu in Kartik 2006. In 1960, in Back to Godhead magazine, the Prabhupada was writing in India and distributing in India. He started to serialize the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. He started translating verse by verse with the word-for-word meaning, and then also the translation, and then the purport, which is the standard of all Prabhupada's books. And he did that for one or two, maybe two issues. And he got to about 11 verses, 11 or 12 verses of Nectar of Devotion, what we call Nectar of Devotion. But there, you can see it says Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by Srila Rupa Goswami Pad. And Prabhupada was alone. It's 1960. He's 1 year a sannyasi. He took sannyas in 1959. So he had the idea, this is a very important book. We should, and he had Isha Upanishad was running in his Back to Godhead magazine, and also the Chaitanya Charitamrita and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So that was 1960. So that's 46 years ago. Right? Is that right? Then he came to America and he started ISKCON, and then he still had the mind to produce Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, but it became an abbreviated version, summary study, which he called Nectar of Devotion, which is his translation of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, right? The ocean of, the nectarine ocean of devotion. But because it was predicted that maybe he wouldn't live so long, he thought, let me summarize this most important book. So it's with great happiness that just recently one of Prabhupada's disciples, His Holiness Bhanu Maharaj, Bhanu Swami, he has translated and printed the entire Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu verse by verse, following the line of Srila Prabhupada. So it's a very very happy work. Carrying on the father's work, it's kind of like the father starts something. Of course, he finished it, but you can see that Prabhupada's intention was that this book is important, that devotees, that those who want to go back to Godhead or those who are interested in Krishna Bhakti, they should know Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu verse by verse. Therefore, it's so important, I'm going to print it in my Back to Godhead newspaper. Right? It was a newspaper in those days. And it may take a long time, but every issue I'll put 10 or 11 verses. So Prabhupada, he started it, and then now his disciples finished the work. Sometimes the father starts a project and he dies, and his last words are, oh my son, please finish the work I started. So the son of the guru is the disciple, and so he's very wonderfully finished the work of Srila Prabhupada. If we want to, not that it wasn't finished, Nectar Devotion is finished, but in spiritual circles, there's finished and more finished and most finished. Purna, Purnatara, and Purnatam, right? Krishna's perfect, more perfect, and most perfect. So we're happy and everyone can benefit. And not only that, to even increase the relish of the book, he includes the purports of Srila Jiva Goswami and Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. So what we thought to do is to use this book as a guideline. Because Nectar Devotion is there for everyone to read, and we also already made a couple MP3s which follow the Nectar Devotion. And in other words, they use the Nectar Devotion of Srila Prabhupada as a basis, and then we add different notes and other things to explain Nectar Devotion. But in these classes, which will start now and continue maybe for a few years, I suppose, or maybe not, I have some idea just to continue speaking it. You know, after Kartik or wherever we are. So then if we're recording it, there's a continuous flow, although the place may be different, audience may be different. Because there's book is divided into four oceans, Eastern Division, Western, Southern, and Northern. And then each ocean has waves, Lahari is called waves, or what we call chapters. So this first division is Sadhana Bhakti, and then Bhava Bhakti and Prema Bhakti. That's the first. And then it goes into further, deeper explanations. There's two whole volumes. So in the Nectar Devotion, Prabhupada, if you want to find verse by verse Nectar Devotion, you can find many times the verses of Nectar Devotion. The Sanskrit is hidden in there, in translation. And I was looking, because Prabhupada has introduction, then he has page one. So introduction, I was assuming, was his preface or introduction to the book. And I was assuming that page one, chapter one, was paralleling chapter one and verse one of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, which would make sense. But Prabhupada is very tricky in some ways. Because what happens is, in the introduction, Prabhupada is covering the first 11 verses in the introduction. So when you read Nectar Devotion in the introduction, you'll find the Mangalacharana of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And more importantly, I think it's, it's on page, Roman numeral page 21 through Roman numeral page 24. Prabhupada is translating the verse and giving the description of verse 11, which appears as verse 11 in the first chapter of the first wave of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. And that's the verse which we're going to discuss today. And this is actually the definition of bhakti. Because after the Mangalacharna, offering respects to Sanatana Goswami and other acharyas, and of course to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because Rupa Goswami is going to describe a book about bhakti. So first thing, when we're describing something, we have to define the terms. What is it? What is the definition? We define bhakti. So if someone says, oh, you're a bhakta, well, what is bhakti? So we have to define what is bhakti. And then someone might say, well, are there any characteristics of bhakti or symptoms, how we can identify it, or what is... So then he goes into the characteristics. Then the next question is, someone will ask, well, that's the definition, and those are the characteristics, or what they say in Sanskrit, lakshana. Now the next question is, well, how do we get it? How do we get bhakti? Or where do we get bhakti from? This is the next question. So then he describes that. Or who has bhakti? Where do we get it? Well, we get it from someone who has it. Well, who has it? Well, the Brajabasis, they have it. The Ragatmikas, they're called Ragatmikas. Ragatmika Jana, or the Nitya Parishads, they have this bhakti. Oh, and what is the nature of the bhakti they have? And then he explains Sambandhanuga, then Kamanuga. Oh, what is that? and then the next question is, well, how do I get it? Right? Anyone who has a logical brain or a systematic brain, which is hopefully most of us, they will think like this. And so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is personally empowered, Rupa Goswami and Sanatana, to research the Bhakti Granths and then to write about it. This is working? You can try. I don't think this is on. Is this on? No. We need it?
I can hear it.
You can hear all right? Okay. No power. Okay. So he was empowered by Lord Chaitanya to research the Bhakti Granths, because there's so much Bhakti is described in the ancient literature, and then compile specific books to help the devotees understand the conception of Gaudiya Vaishnavism. What is the teaching Lord Chaitanya came to give that he never came to give before? And that's Gopi Bhav, or Manjari Bhav, Raghunuga Bhakti. So therefore, the standard or the style of writing books of Rupa and Sanatana is that they're writing in their own language, which is Sanskrit, and then they're backing everything up by giving praman, or evidence, from different Vedic literatures, Padma Puran, Narada Pancharatra, Skanda Puran, etc. So he'll say something, he'll describe different principles of bhakti, and then someone will say, oh, well, you're saying that, Rupa Goswami, but where else is it only coming from your mind? Or is it actually, you have some backing? Is it in Shruti and Smriti and Puran? Because people have faith and that they get support from that. So this is the idea of how he's presenting it. Radhisham. So we're starting Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So I have some notes we'll read about this verse. This verse we're going to describe is verse 11. And it's very important if anyone's interested in memorizing verses, because verses, sometimes people think, well, verse memorization is dry. But verses, actually, the intention of verses is for verses to become like, I can put this toasty over here against the wall because I can't see. Just here. Just like that, Buzz. Not too close to the wall. Watch the way from the wall a little bit. Yeah. The verses are something, sometimes people that study verses, I mean, I'm not a great verse freak or anything. I don't know very many verses, but verses, sometimes they say verses should become like our friends. Verses are our friends. And someone may think, well, this is, rudimentary or elementary, but actually the verses, as we change and as we grow in Krishna consciousness, then the verses, our friends also change. Like before we became devotees, maybe we had some friends. And now that we're, let's say, aspiring to be devotees, our friends may be different in many cases. And as we progress and develop more and more bhakti, then our circle of friends also changes. Maybe because we get the adhikar and eligibility to meet higher friends. And ultimately, we get the eligibility and the adhikar to meet the greatest friends. Because the word sakhi means friends. So we want to meet Lalita Sakhi and Vishakha Sakhi and Rupa Mandri and Rati Mandri. We want to meet them and become their friends. So as verses are friends, so they take us in a friendship ultimately to these friends, to the eternal friends, the Nitya Janas or the Parishads. So now what verses act as is something like they become almost like a, sometimes you can say, it just came to my mind, like people have a heart, and if their heart is not working very well, they get some kind of machine. I think it's called a pacemaker. You've heard this term, pacemaker? It gives some, as far as I know, I may be incorrect, but as far as I know, it gives some kind of electric stimulation to the muscles of the heart. Is that right? No one knows. But it's some type of machine that they insert into the heart, and I believe it gives some, because the heart is a muscle, and it gets nerve stimulation to make the muscle, you know, contract and expand. So this pacemaker, it adjusts somehow the functioning of the heart by giving some electric stimulus. So, and then it keeps it alive. So verses almost are like a pacemaker, and what they're used for, they can be used for like, for sankalpa. Sankalpa means an intention. We state our intention. What do we want to attain, or what do we want? In any given activity, we're doing it unconsciously, but in Sanskrit and in sadhana, they give it a term, it's called sankalp. If you're doing an act of charity with some Brahmin, then he'll say, okay, make your sankalp. Or if you're performing a yajna, you're doing a yajna, he'll tell the jajaman, or the person who's doing yajna, okay, you fix your sankalp. So even as sadhakas, we also have sankalp. Sankalp means our aspiration. We establish our aspiration and our intention within our mind and consciousness. And this, it's almost like that aspiration, or you can say intention, which is a sankalpa for a bhakta or for a devotee, it becomes like in manufacturing, it becomes a template. A template is you form some piece of metal of a certain shape. Then you pour other metals into that, and then all those metals take the shape. So we have an intention. Our intention is to attain, you know, the service of Radharani, right? The loving service of Radharani. That is our sadhana, that is our sadhya. That is our goal, is the service of the lotus feet of Radharani. And we're attempting that either in meditation or what, all our activities are drawn to that line. And that is our anyabhilashita shunyam, which is what this verse is describing. So this particular shloka, or any shloka, they become connected to our sankalpa, and then they give energy. For example, this verse that we're studying, or we want to read, we have some notes that we'll read about, and we can ask questions and discuss about. Anyabhilashita shunyam, jnana karmadyanamritam, anukulyena krishnanu, shilanam bhakta uttama. Rupa Goswami is defining Uttama Bhakti. Now this definition of Uttama Bhakti applies to Sadhana Bhakti, it applies to Bhava Bhakti, and applies to Prema Bhakti, which are the three stages of development in Bhakti. So this verse is important to memorize. That's what we're saying, that shlokas are important. Because in this verse are all the conceptions of Uttama Bhakti. It's a complete definition of Uttam Bhakti. You can't find in any Vedic literature anywhere such a definition. It's perfect. And that's why you can see in Jiva Goswami and Vishnu's analysis, they explain the perfection of this definition, which we'll try to read some of our notes about that. So when we learn this verse, then this verse, it becomes a template for our mind. It becomes a pacemaker for our devotion. It becomes part and parcel of our sankalp. Because throughout our days and, you know, nights or whatever, movements, we get so many challenges to our intention. Because of material desire, because of prarabdha karma, so many things come and say, you know, what do you really want? What is your real intention? Do you really want this? You know, like we say, we want to realize Manjari Sarup or attain Manjari Sarup by mercy of Guru or Nam or service. Or maybe we've been revealed, it's been given. But we want, having it and realizing it are two different things. So, but that is, everyone, we have this in mind. This is our mindset. We want this, but we have to want this more than anything else. Because if we want this more than anything else, then what happens is that we become identified with our role models. Our role models are Rupa Manjari, Rati Manjari, and any, in our Guru Parampara, Guru Sakhi Parampara. And then they see this person, this sadhaka, anyabhilashita shunyam. Anyabhilash means anya, no other desire. He wants nothing else, or he or she wants nothing else but the service of Radharani in anugatya, in the line, or you can say dara, in the line of me. You know, like we say, Shri Rupa Manjari Pad, Sei Mora Sampad. We say, Mora Sampad, my wealth. He says, Narottam Das, he's explaining this song. Basically what he's saying is, Nadananda Janana Sundaram. He's saying, I don't want anything else. You're my wealth, you're my japa, you're my mantra, you're my dharma, you're my karma, you're my everything, Rupa Manjari. You know, he's saying like this. That means he's accepting that, which means he's eliminating everything else. Because when there's acceptance, there must be elimination. So he's accepting that, yes, I want everything, as what I want is your feet and your seva, and I don't want anything else. So this is supposed to, these are a group of shlokas, or this bhajan, like this shloka, are supposed to give strength to our sankalpa, that anyabhilash, I don't want anything else. So then when Rupa Manjari and Rati Manjari and the other sakhis who are our role models and manjaris, they see, oh, look at this person. Then that consciousness, that intention, that sankalpa, and that determination attracts their attention, attracts their energy. And their energy is bhava bhakti. Their energy is bhakti. And what is bhakti? Bhakti is ladini and samvit. So when this bhava bhakti, or when this sarup shakti that's in their heart, when it comes from them, it has to be given. It comes from them. And then when that actually mixes with our heart, then we actually realize what is our manjari sarup. And then we live in the siddhadeya. We can live in a meditation, actually enter into lila and do service there. It becomes automatic, natural. Because now our sthaivav, our bhav is in this body. We're in this body. And it's very natural for us to do anything involved with this body. We don't have to practice to eat. We don't have to practice to sleep. We don't have to, control our minds to, contact this body. Because our sthaivav, our bhav is for this body. Because, our energy is, we're not made of surup shakti. We're like iron. It has not become immersed in the fire. So that fire, when the iron contacts the fire, then it becomes fire eyes. So when the bhava bhakti, when the surup shakti contacts our heart, then that, all those things become natural. To think of Krishna's lila, to meditate, to take part, to serve. It becomes natural, svabhavika. So, I'll just, get on with the notes I collected here over the last few months, and I'll read these. That's kind of the way we do these classes. So this verse, Rupa Goswami is giving a definition of Uttam Bhakti, pure devotional service. So, exactly what is bhakti? We're all aspiring for and trying to become pure devotees of Radha and Krishna and Braj. So bhakti, as we know, generally means devotion, love, sentiment, loving service for the pleasure of Krishna. So now there's an interesting point that is being made, that when Vyasadeva was writing the Srimad Bhagavatam, he had one particular verse in his mind. And from that verse, he expanded 18,000 verses. He said, quite a long purport on one verse. And he was thinking, this verse is so important. Now I have to explain. I have to explain very clearly through stories, through analogies, sometimes through allegories, like King Paranjan's story is what they call allegory. I have to explain exactly what is this, what this verse is in my mind, so that everyone will understand what is pure devotion. So then, what Vishnath is saying is that Rupa Goswami, he actually realized what verse, he realized that the verse, like the guiding verse of the heart of Vyasadeva. Just like someone might see someone engaged in some activity, and they're really into that activity, and they may stop you and say, you know, what makes you tick? What's driving you? You're a driven man. I can remember, I don't know if it's exactly the same, but it just comes to mind. When we were distributing books in the airport, in the early days, in the 70s, we were very enthusiastic to go from one person to another person, and just like a bee is so excited. You go in the forest and you see bees are so excited to go from one flower to another. They go in one flower only for a second. They get some nectar and they're immediately out. And even you're watching, they don't even see you. They don't even know. They're absorbed in getting the nectar. One flower to another flower to another flower. They're oblivious to their surrounding. So when we were on book distribution, it was like this. One person to another person to another person. Take this book. And with great determination and enthusiasm, of course we're young also, passionate youngsters. And sometimes people sitting in the airport waiting for a flight for 1 hour or so, or 2 hours are delayed. They're watching the devotees, because what to do in the airport? In those days there was no televisions in the airport. So people, they're watching. And then the guy comes up to me and says, excuse me. And then immediately he started to try to sell him a book. He said, no, I know you're trying to sell books. I've been watching you for an hour. And he doesn't know where Hare Krishna is. He said, what are you all about? You know, are you making money here? What's driving you? What is pushing you? What is driving you? You know, you're getting paid to do this, or you know, you're getting $100 an hour, or what? How much? You're smiling all the time, and you're so friendly, and people just reject you and say no, and you go to 20 people and they say no, and they don't take a book. Still, you're happy, and what, you know? And that's what mystifies him. Not the money and the books or anything like that. Is what's driving this person? What's making him act? So then you try to explain that you're crazy and. You're brainwashed and you're somehow gone crazy after this old man from India trying to please this old guy. And somehow he said, if you pass out these books, you'll be happy. So in the same way, Rupa Goswami was trying to understand what is driving this Vyasadeva on. Sometimes he's in Badrinath and he's writing Bhagavatam. And sometimes he's on the bank of the Ganga and he's writing Bhagavatam. And sometimes he came to Braj and he's writing Bhagavatam. He's moving all around the place, but he's always writing this Bhagavatam. What verse is driving him on? What's making him, what is he thinking? What is he thinking when he's writing? Just like what is this young man thinking? What is he thinking and feeling when he's running around like a monkey in the airport? So what is Vyasadeva thinking? So Rupa Goswami, he was deeply meditating on it, and he realized that this is the verse. Chapter, you know, first division of first wave, first lahari, first chapter, 11th verse, which is in Prabhupada's Nectar and Devotion, I mentioned earlier. And it's in the introduction. Prabhupada kind of fooled everyone. He put this verse in the introduction along with the first 11 verses. But it's on Roman numeral page 21 through 24 in the Nectar Devotion. This verse is described, Anyabhi Lashita Shunyam. Jnana Kamarat Yanabritam Anukulyena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhakti Uttama. It's like we use this as a measuring stick. Anukulya. Anukulya means anukul, means favorable. Right? Anukul. And we say pratikul, anukul, the two limbs of surrender. So anything we're doing, we can think, is this favorable? Is it what I'm doing, this service, this activity, this thinking, this consciousness, this sentiment, is this giving pleasure to Krishna? I feel funny to even say it, because I can't hardly remember a minute in a day when I'm actually operating on this principle. But anyway, we can at least speak the principle. The principle is this verse is our template, or this verse is in our sankalpa. If this verse is our guiding light, then we're thinking, oh Krishna, is this activity, is this giving pleasure to you? Will this please you? And am I doing this with a favorable attitude? Is my mind, and you know, I'm happily doing this, and I really want to do this for you? And there's no like, little for you and a little for me, and let's share this, you know, let's share this service, let's share this service. I mean, you know, you can take a little and I can take a little. So Rupa Goswami, he understood this. So then, that this is the verse, and what is told is that this verse, Anyabhilashita Shunyam, is the basis of the whole Bhagavatam. So when we study Srimad Bhagavatam, we can study it from the basis of this verse. We can look at the lives, because the Bhagavatam is presenting different aspects of Godhead, and different forms and presentations of Godhead, Bhagavan, and different forms and presentations of bhaktas. Right? You have Karma Mishra Bhaktas and Gyan Mishra Bhaktas and Shuddha Bhaktas and Rupa Siddha, and all the different types of bhakti are displayed in the Bhagavatam. Why? So when you want to buy something in the market, if you want to buy gold, for example, not only do you have to know what is gold, you have to know what is not gold. So if you want to know what is something, you have to also know what is not something. If someone says, oh, gold is shiny and it's yellow, you know? So you say, oh, I just go and find something shiny and yellow and it's gold. But brass and bronze and bell metal are also like this. So then he has to say, but there's other things, brass and bronze, that are also shiny and gold, but you have to test like this, and so there has to be some cross test. So you have to know, so then you can eliminate. You have to know what is not the thing that you're looking for, and you have to know what is the thing. So this is exactly how bhakti is being explained in the pages of the Bhagavatam. So ultimately there's so many examples of, well, okay, Dhruva had some kind of bhakti in the fourth canto. You meet a bhakta named Dhruva, and he worships some form of Godhead, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, right? Vasudeva, or Vishnu, and Paramatma. So he went to a certain level of realization. But then what is that? But is that the kind of bhakti we want? No, this is... So Vyasadeva says, look, here's bhakti, and he's worshiping Vishnu, but this is not Uttam Bhakti. This is not Uttam Bhakti. So there's so many examples of Anya Abhilash, or that have Anya Abhilash Purnam. There's Anya Abhilash Purnam and Anya Abhilash Sunyam. As you know, Sunyam means devoid of, or zero, nothing, not a trace of material desire. Anya means other. Anyata, right? We say Harinam, Harinam, Harinam eva kevalam, kalo anasteva, 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 gatir anyata. There is no other way but Harinam. So Anyata, so Anya Abhilash, Abhilash means desire. So Anya means other desire. Other desires, Purnam. That means, I am full, Purna, Om Purnamadam Purnam, I am full of other desires, but pure bhakti, pure devotion. So, it's a little bit of a joke, but we want to get free from Anyabhilashita Purnam and become Anyabhilashita Sunyam. No other desire then, not Shunyavadis with no desire and give up our, or at least cover our identity. You can never really give up your identity, you can cover it. But, we want this desire to anukulyena Krishnanu. We want to serve Krishna favorably. That's what we want. So this is what we have to learn to eliminate. So the Bhagavatam, he showed, okay, see, look at Dhruva's story. Oh yeah, that's very nice. He did this austerity. Oh, but he had this Abhilash. He wanted a kingdom. Oh, okay, we have to eliminate that. And so we have to take something good from Dhruva for our bhakti bhajan, but we have to also eliminate. We accept something and eliminate something. Accept and reject. Oh, we accept. Oh, his determination. His austerity. He's so much determination. That's why Mahaprabhu, he was listening practically every few weeks, he was hearing a story of Dhruva Maharaj from Gadadhar Pandit in Tota Gopinath. Because he was listening to Bhagavatam. He was listening so much to Prahlad Charitra and Dhruva Charitra. This is from Gadadhar. Because who can explain the nature of Uttam Bhakti better than Radharani? Because she's the personification of... Bhakti means prem, and prem means Mahabhav. There's no higher prem than Mahabhav. So the teacher is Gadadhar Pandit. The student is many students, but one is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's interesting. Radha learning from Radha. Because Chaitanya is Radha. Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Radha, Radha Krishna Nahayanya. So Gadadhar Pandit is Radharani as guru, as teacher. And then Radharani is student, but it's actually Krishna in the form of Mahaprabhu, trying to learn what makes Radharani tick. So one thing that makes Radharani move is determination. She's really determined to serve Krishna, no matter what. Arya chapat hitwa, Aryapat hitwa, it says in the Bhagavatam, Rasa Panchadaya. that the path of Arya Dharma, or Dharma, they just hitwa, means they rejected, they threw it out. Loka Dharma, Stri Dharma, Patni Dharma, they didn't care. They were not attached. They followed. They didn't become like just, you know, living in the forest. They stayed home, they followed the Dharma, but they were not attached to it. This is a lesson. So Radharani is, she has so much determination that she can give up anything. So this, Radharani is teaching this to the world and to Mahaprabhu by teaching the story of Dhruva in the Puri Leela. It's explained in Chaitanya Mangal by Lochandas Thakur that Mahaprabhu, he listened to the story of Dhruva 100 times. He heard the Leela 100 times in the 18 years he was in Puri. And he heard Prahlad's teachings 100 times. So it's not that he was just absorbed in, oh, gopis, gopis, gopis. At midnight, during Ras, Nisha Leela, then you can understand what his absorption was. So he's showing this, he's showing interesting teaching in Puri that it's like, seva sadaka rupena, siddha rupena chatrahi. That his sadaka is, he's almost like in the daytime, he's like showing a path of sadhana, you know, like a sadaka. In the nighttime, he's in siddhadeya. Because he's all these meditating in these leelas and floating in the Jamuna and seeing the Jalkeli and all these things. Because at night, then all the anubhavas and the inspiration for all these things is coming from Lita and Vishaka. Right? Ramananda Roy and Surabh Damodar and Gambira. In Gambira, he went very deep. Gambira means deep. He went into the deepest, he went in the deepest realms of Mahabhav. But in the daytime, when the sun's shining, in the garden, Tota means garden, and Gopinath's garden, when he was hearing from Gadadhar Pandit, then he's hearing about Dhruva, Nisringadev. What does Nisringadev have to do with Jalkeli? Right? That's why we say, oh, these guys, this con, they're crazy, man. They're just worshiping Nisringadev all over the place, you know. And they are crazy if that's as far as they go. If they don't get to Jalkeli and they just end up with Nisringadev, then they missed it, because that's not what, you know, Prabhupada came to teach and introduce. And sometimes they get lost, you know, with the Nisringadev and forget about the Jalkeli. And once you enter the Jalkeli, then you just wave goodbye to Nisringadev and say, thanks a lot, you know, you did a good job, you removed my anarthas, and, you know, like this. So Prahlad, so many teachings of Prahlad, so this is a little bit, it's not tangential, it's actually to the point. So here, Vyasadeva is also describing, now look at the bhakti of Prahlad. This is also very nice bhakti. Now in Prahlad, we can see some difference. Now here you see the beginning of Shuddha bhakti. But even then, his pure bhakti is mixed with gyan. When this is explained in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. So Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Lagu Bhagavatamrita, and Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Brihad Bhagavatamrita is also a purport of Anyabhilashita Shunyam. The whole Brihad Bhagavatamrita is also explaining what is Uttam Bhakti. Because this is what we want to attain. In our practice as Sadhana Bhakti, we want to follow the guidelines of Uttam Bhakti. In Bhava Bhakti, we want to follow the guidance of Uttam Bhakti. And even in Prema Bhakti, we want to follow the guidelines of Uttam Bhakti. Because even in Prema, the teaching goes on. It's not that even if we attain Prema, the threshold of Prema in this body, then we enter Bhoma Vrindavan Leela in Vastu City, and then still the teaching is going on there. And there, directly, now it's through meditation and through other ways we receive teaching through Shastra and through their expanded forms of Shastra. But there in Bhoma Vrindavan, in Prakat Leela, we directly meet the gurus. Now we just read their books. Like someone may, like say we wrote a few books, and someone may read some of our books, and then they may meet us directly and get maybe other teachings or refined teachings. So now we're only reading the books of Rati Manjari and Rupa Manjari. But there in Bhoma Vrindavan, oh, I read your books. Oh, you're Rupa Manjari. Oh, I was reading your books. Acha, all right. Did you like them? Oh, they're really good. They got me over here. Look, they did something good. And then, you know, then Rati Manjari, the teaching will go on. Not only that, and then they will take us and introduce us to Vishakha, and she'll teach us how to sing, and Lita, and that so many teachings will go on. So it's not that, even when we attain Prema, and even when we enter Bhoma Vrindavan in our Sarup city, in our Siddhadeya, even then we'll be learning more what is this Uttam Bhakti. Refinements of Uttam Bhakti, because Uttam Bhakti personified is Radharani. So this definition of Uttam Bhakti goes all the way through, all levels. Anyabhilashita Shunyam. This verse is the most important verse for every Gaudiya Vaishnav. So someone says, oh, I can't learn all these verses and all the Bhagavad Gita and this and all these shloka books. I mean, you know, there's too many shloka books. There's another one coming out. Gaudiya Math is working on one, and now this Khan and Prabhupada, and everybody has a shloka book, and everyone's going around trying to. If you go sometimes in different mats or different places, they try to show off how much shlokas they know. You know, it's like becomes like some kind of ego competition. But we want everything simple in this age. We want push button fast. So Lord Chaitanya says, okay, you want it fast? Here's 8 shlokas. Chaito Darpana Marjanam. Okay, well, you know, that was 500 years ago. You know, people had some brains and, you know, 8 shlokas. But now, you know, 8 shlokas is a lot. I mean, Ashlishavav Padavar, Darshanam, I don't know. Yeah, it's like, 8 shlokas is too much. Can we have one? Okay. Look, 1 shloka. Because these 8 are nothing but explanations of this one. These 8 shlokas, which describe Sambandha, Avideya, and Prayojana, they're nothing but explanations of this one shloka. Right, and this shloka is anyavilashita shunya. So, okay, learning means realizing. Learning means using. If you attain knowledge, I learned something. I learned how to cook. Oh, that's nice. Do you cook? No. Do you ever cook for any meal or make somebody happy by cooking for them, inviting them over? Your mother, father, friend? Oh, no. But do you know? Oh, I know cooking very well. Then what is useless? What is this? If your knowledge cannot benefit anyone, it's useless, and moreover, it'll be taken from you because knowledge is given to you. My Saraswati, and she'll take it away if it's not used. You'll lose it. Like they say, knowledge is like water in a clay pot. And if that pot is nice, you carry it here and there and distribute the water. But if you get a hole in it, then you can't distribute anything as the water runs out. So your mind is like a clay pot. And if Saraswati gives you some knowledge and you don't distribute it for the benefit of others, then she pokes a hole in that mind and all the knowledge leaks out. It's described like this. The Saraswati, she gives material knowledge, and Divya Saraswati, and Radharani, gives spiritual knowledge, Daivi Shakti. So therefore, this knowledge is to be distributed. So with this one verse, we should learn. We learn this verse, like you learn the science of cooking, and then you try to, you know, distribute, help, cook for Krishna. This is perfection. So if we learn this verse, then we should act on it, use this knowledge in our life. And this becomes, as I say, this verse, we can just like, as Krishna's Kaviraj said, put this verse around your neck and wear it as a mala. And I know one godbrother, he had his around his neck, he has tattooed this verse. And I said, that's very nice, but seeing is believing. So he tattooed the verse around his neck because in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishna's Kaviraj says, a devotee should wear this verse around his neck like a garland. Trinadapi sunichena taroriva sahishana amanina manitena kirtaniya sada hari. So it's tattooed around his neck, so it's there forever. And I said, that's nice, but is it, are you living it? As we said, verses are our friends. So what do you do with your friends? You live with them. You interact with them. You play with them. You share with them. Are we living this verse? So this verse, Anyabhilashita Shunyam, I would humbly request everyone to memorize the verse, and hopefully by the end of this class we'll just learn it by osmosis, by hearing it, and try to live the verse, and use the verse, because the verse will stay with us forever. This verse will be echoing in our hearts even when we enter Moma Vrindavan. This verse will be like music resonating. If you go sometimes, in the old days, let's say pre-war days, because when they join ISKCON, they say you're declaring a war. What was it? Declaring a war on the illusory energy. They used to say it like this. So now we're in the war. So I can say pre-war days, right? Before the war. So now I'm in the war. But before I was in the war, we used to go to rock concerts. And if you go to a rock concert, the music is so loud. And then a day or two after, it's still reverberating, and it's like, wah, wah, wah. Your brain is still like, your brain cells are still like, the bass guitar is still vibrating in your brain. At least I had the experience. Maybe I was sensitive or dull or whatever. And I can remember, it took a few days for all those things to kind of wash off my brain. So in the same way, this verse, well, if it enters our heart and we start to live this verse and meditate on this verse, then this verse, what is this verse? Is this just some Sanskrit words? This verse is the heart of Sri Rupa Manjari. This verse is the heart of Sri Rupa Goswami. And his heart is the heart of Sri. Because when Lord Chaitanya embraced him and Dasa made a god, Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutle Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. That Rupa Goswami, if you embrace someone, you see two people embracing very tightly, you say, oh, they're embracing heart to heart. Or they're embracing, they have this phrase. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he embraced Rupa Goswami heart to heart. And in fact, in that heart to heart embrace, he transferred his heart to Rupa Goswami. So the heart of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is called the heart of Radharani, Sri Rupam. So Sri Rupa means the heart of the form of Radharani's heart is Sri Rup. So that form of Radharani's heart entered the heart of Sri Rupa Goswami. And now Sri Rupa Goswami is thinking, how can I spread this Manjari Bhav? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his Manobishtam, Abhi, and we say Bishta. Bishta means desire, like Anya Abhilash. So Bishta means desire. Mano means mind and heart. What is the desire of his heart? That heart that came into my heart, what is his desire? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what, now he put his heart in my heart. Now I feel his heart, my heart and his heart become Tanmaya. They become one. Now what is that Manobishtam? Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam. What is that living desire, that Chaitanya, Sri Chaitanya, what is that living desire in his heart? His desire is that this Manjari Bhav gets distributed, that everyone can attain this, that can take up this, or at least have opportunity. And so, how can I help that? How can I fulfill that desire, that Manobishtam of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? I have to find one shloka, one verse. I mean, I know Sanskrit, I know Persian, I know Hindi, I know Bengali, I know so many languages, I know so much Shastra. But I have to find one verse that'll actually convey the heart of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, what he wanted to teach, in one verse. What is that verse? And then it comes out. Anya Bilashita Shunyam. Jnana Karma Dhyanavritam. Anukalyena Krishnanu Shilanam Bhakta Uttama. This is the verse. So this verse exactly defines pure devotion, Uttam Bhakti. If one understands this verse, he will understand everything about the kingdom of bhakti. But if we don't understand this verse, we won't understand anything about anything. By understanding this verse and following the meaning of this verse, one can properly practice devotional service and quickly advance in Krishna consciousness, pure devotion. So this is the logical way to begin. The book says Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It's a book about bhakti. So next question is, okay, what is bhakti? Then what are the characteristics of bhakti? Very systematic book. Very systematic, as we mentioned in the beginning of the class, which some devotees didn't hear. What is the characteristics? Oh, well, okay, that's the definition, that's the characteristics. Well, are there different types of bhakti? Okay, here's some different types of Uttam Bhakti, Sambandhanuga, Kamanuga. Then, well, anybody who has that? Someone has that thing? You're describing this commodity or this entity, bhakti. Who has it? Oh yes, these Brijvasis, they have it. Oh, okay. Well, they have it. Can someone get it? Can I attain that? It sounds attractive. I've heard all about it and I'm pretty interested. Yes, you can attain it. Oh, I can attain it. Well, how do you attain it? Well, like this, you know. Maybe you can move up here, because I think she wants to lean on the wall or back her. You can come closer, because the window is disturbing her, because we need to get a little draft there. So, because we're all getting old now, no? We need some walls. I got all these pillows and stuff, so I'm doing great, but everyone else is. So this is what he's saying here. So this verse is the absolute essence of all Vedic literature. This is another thing that's why I mentioned that this verse, you can use this verse when you study Brihad Bhagavatamrita and say, oh, when you know the verse, know the meaning, how are these different characters are being described in the first part and different planets and different, you know, the sojourn of Gopa Kumar in the second part. How is this, what degrees of pure Uttam Bhakti are being shown here? And where's the covering of Gyan here? Where's the covering? Avrita means covering. Where's the avritam of gyan? Where's the covering of karma? How is karma entering in here and filtering out the pure bhakti? How is it covering? So when you know this verse becomes a standard of measurement, how you can measure these especially, because That's why it's saying that this verse is the essence of all Vedic literature. So when you study Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Brihad Bhagavatamrita, and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Bhagavad Gita, these are, let's say, the basic books, Isopanishad, then you use this verse as a standard of measurement. Because Rupa Goswami has summarized the definition of bhakti in two lines, which is really eloquence. So all other Goswami literatures are merely expansions trying to explain the meaning of this one verse. Now I'll give some translations of this verse. And then in the last 10 minutes of the class I'll entertain questions. So I'll speak for about 45 minutes every day. 9:30 to 10:15 or so. Translations. This is from Nectar Devotion, from the introduction, Srila Prabhupada. First-class devotional service, Uttam Bhakti, is known by one's tendency to be fully engaged in Krishna consciousness, serving the Lord favorably. Now again, Prabhupada, he gives it, the same verse appears again, and I believe it's Rupa Shiksha, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, chapter 19, verse 67. Prabhupada translates it differently, or let's say in a different way. When first class devotional service, which means Uttam Bhakti, when first class devotional service develops, one must be devoid of all material desires. That means Anya, Bilashita, Shunyam. Kama, knowledge attained by monistic philosophy, in other words, Brahma Gyan or Advaya Gyan. That means our bhakti should not be covered by this type of Gyan. It's not the no Gyan, but this type of Gyan. This Brahma Gyan or this Mayavadi. Monistic means, in other words, When first class devotional service develops, one must be devoid of all material desires, comma, knowledge attained by monistic philosophy and fruit of actions, means karma. The devotee must constantly serve Krishna favorably as Krishna desires. This is a kind of a pinching point here. It's kind of like, well, I do what I want and offer it to Krishna. So that's some type of bhakti, that's a fact. It's called karma mishra bhakti. I guess we have to see what is your mentality also, but if it's even bhakti. So that's this nice point. Devotee must constantly serve Krishna that favorably as Krishna desires. So there's not much room for kicking back, as they say. Constantly means 24 hours a day. That's one point. So that takes your whole time. So that's your body may be constantly engaged 24 hours in Krishna's service, let's say ideally. But then where is your mind? What is your mind, your sentiments, your feelings, your thinking? Well, it should be favorable. It should be thinking favorably. Who is the object of your activity? It should be as Krishna desires. Now in Bhanuswami, he's translated the verse like this. The highest bhakti is defined as continuous service or emotions directed toward Krishna. Because this is... In technical terms, this is called bhava, it's called chaista rupa and bhava rupa. So bhava, as you know, bhava means sentiments or feelings, and chaista means actions. Sometimes chaista means, in relation to the mind, it means planning. Like there's icha and chaista and kriya. So there's desire, then there's planning, or kind of working things over in your mind. That's called chaista, can be called chaista. And also that can mean externally, actions are called chaista. So, that's why he's saying here, because that's actually... The highest bhakti is defined as continuous service or emotions directed toward Krishna, his expansion forms, or others related to him, that means Krishna's devotees, with a pleasing attitude toward Krishna. It should be devoid of desires other than the desire to please the Lord, and unobstructed by impersonal jnana, the materialistic rituals of karma, or other unfavorable acts. I'll simply read a couple more definitions and then entertain some questions. And then the elaboration of all these definitions will go over the next day or so as we discuss this verse. And the third definition, this is from Srila Prabhupada's godbrother, Ban Maharaj, Bhaktivedanta Ban Maharaj. Actively serving Krishna and all that is related to Krishna is real liking and relish. This is how he's translating anukulya, liking and relish. Is real liking and relish in a way that is agreeable and pleasing to Krishna. So all these, rather, you could say it's verbose, but it has its flavor also and nuances of meaning you can derive from it. This is how he's translating anukulya. Anukulya means favorable. So he's saying all that's related to Krishna with real liking and relish in a way that is agreeable and pleasing to Krishna. In other words, favorable means favorable attitude. This is the mindset or the mentality means that, yes, this is favorable to Krishna. He likes it, but I also like it. I like to do things that he likes. But sometimes now we may do, okay, he likes it, so I do it, but I don't really like it. So he's like, that from our side, it's favorable. We're doing it for his favor, to make him happy in a favorable attitude that, oh, he'll be pleased that this is nice. I'm doing it so he'll be pleased and I have some favorable mood. But when we have real liking and relish in a way that is agreeable and pleasing to Krishna, it's very interesting he's bringing this out because, you know, he's a seasoned devotee, advanced Vaishnava. So it's kind of like his realizations are mixed with the translation. And then that's really, these are some of the branch definitions of this anukulya. This service should be free from extraneous motives other than the desire for bhakti itself. So this is what he calls avritam, the coverings of karma and jnana. He says this is ulterior motives, desire to enjoy. Karma and jnana means enjoy and bhog and tyag. Karma means to enjoy, and tyag means to kick back. It doesn't mean just, you know, merge into Brahman. It means to just, I just want to relax, man. I'm tired of doing all the bhakti. That's a type of tyag. That's a type of jnana. It's a type of jnana. Isn't there any vacation for devotees? No, I've been serving so long. I need to kick back and relax and get a little fresh air and walk in the park. You know, it's like, give me a break. So this is actually, because we all have this nature, either to enjoy or to relax. I mean, excuse me, either to endeavor and enjoy or just we don't want to do anything. I don't want to see anybody. I want to talk to them. I just want to be by myself. This is actually the jnana, like a jnana. This is a covering of jnana. I just want to be myself. Then when you're by yourself, you're kind of like merged in your own yourself. It's like a merging type. You're merged in your own peace, your own solitude. Then after a while, you say, oh, this is boring. Let me talk to somebody. Let me mix up with somebody. Then that's expression of karma. Action. But there's two sides of the same coin. Both are enjoying. You're enjoying renunciation, you're enjoying bhog. These are coverings of bhakti. There's not service of God there. There's enjoyment. Mayavadis are enjoying. So bhog and tyag are another way of explaining bhog. Like sometimes people say, what does it mean that these four coverings of the human, the conditioned soul has four defects? Imperfect senses, tendency for illusion, to be illusioned and commit mistakes, is brahma, viparlipsa, pramad, and whatever the other one is. And then the fourth one is called the cheating propensity. Right? So someone says, what is this cheating propensity? It means when you're playing cards, you look at the other guy's cards or something, or you look over and say, oh, you know, what is this cheating? You're cheating on someone's wife or husband, or what is this? The cheating propensity. Kapat. They say kapat nature in Hindi. Kapat. What is the cheating propensity? Well, let's ask you. What do you think? What is the cheating propensity, Prakash? You know, these four defects. You've heard of these things? That the conditioned soul is, you know, we have imperfect senses and we get illusion because of those, and then we make mistakes and the cheating propensity. So what is the cheating propensity?
Tell lies for self-benefit. Tell lies for self-benefit.
Tell lies for self-benefit.
Krishna, to hide the real motives.
Hide real motives.
To be the pleasures.
Yes. Any more?
To cheat Krishna.
You can't define the word with the word. What is it? Cheating propensity? Cheating. Well, at least some of these definitions, of course, apply in the field of morality and, let's say, mundane ethics. But when we come into bhakti, the field of bhakti, the cheating propensity is the coverings of jnana and karma. Because when the jiva is covered by either jnana or karma, he cheats himself out of the potential that he could attain. The jiva has a potential to attain love of God. This is the potential, the jiva. He has a potential. Of course, it has to descend. Golokara Prima Dana. That bhakti has to come to us. It is transcendental. It's Sarup Shakti. We have the potential. A field has a potential to grow crops, but you have to put seeds in it. So we have a field. The heart is a kshetra, a field. So the potential of the jiva is to attain that gift, that prem purushartha, that great gift that Lord Chaitanya has come to give to every jiva in Kali Yuga. So if you don't get that $1 million bonus or that $1 million, win the sweepstakes, Chaitanya's sweepstakes, then you're cheated yourself. Because you, like someone has, like he's a genius or something. He says, look, if you go to college with your memory, your photographic memory, you can become such a great person or so wealthy or whatever. Oh, I just want to relax. You know? So he has the potential, so much mind power and memory power. He could be a great, you know, sense enjoyer or whatever, because he has that power of intelligence. But he misuses it. So this is considered the cheating propensity, the tendency for bhog and tyag. Tendency to enjoy and renounce. This is the cheating propensity. So these are the coverings of the conditioned soul. Everyone has a tendency, hey, let's enjoy, or I just want to relax, I want to be peaceful. So that's again, he said, look, this senses are giving me too much trouble. Just annihilate these senses. And this ego, I just want to merge in Brahma Suyuja Mukti. You don't give up your individual identity, you just cover it. So you cover yourself with a bunch of white light. You're still existing. But you're unconscious. You're not conscious anymore of your existence. That's what Suyuja means. You have Savishesh Brahma and Nirvishesh. So Nirvishesh means you cover your identity, and but it's there because you're part, eternal part and parcel. Jiva Bhuta Sanatana. Krishna says in Gita, Jiva is a Sanatana. He's Sanatana. He's eternal identity. But merging in Brahman means you cover. You have no. You're not conscious. Like you're asleep. You're not conscious of your body. So you're like sleeping in Brahman. But the Vaishnavas, they want to keep their individual identity. So this tendency for this karma and gyan, this is the cheating propensity. So this is the avritam. This is the covering of the jiva, because it covers the potential. We cannot realize our full potential as long as we're covered by these tendencies for karma and gyan. So the cheating is we're cheating ourselves. And then, you know, we lie and all these things that you mentioned and all that stuff, that's we're lying ourselves. And that's covering us. Because we could be, you know, ecstatic, you know, ecstatically existing in a spiritual world of love and happiness. So we can take some questions. There's two more definitions. I might as well just finish them. Then we can at least, that section is finished. So I said, this service should be free from extraneous motives other than desire for bhakti itself, and without any contamination of karma or jnana or yoga. That is pure uttam bhakti, bhakti of the highest quality. It's quite nice. There's one definition from Srila Narayana Maharaj. The cultivation of activities meant exclusively for the pleasure of Krishna, the uninterrupted flow of service to Krishna, performed through all endeavors of body, mind, and speech, and through expression of various spiritual sentiments. In other words, it's not just body, it's bhav. You know, because sadhana is supposed to perform with some kind of at least bhava bhas, and then that may attract the mercy of the bhava bhaktas, and then we enter into the platform of bhava bhakti. So there must be some feelings and of loving feelings behind it. Through expression of various spiritual sentiments, because that's uttam bhakti on a higher level, which is not contaminated by the coverings of jnana and knowledge aimed at impersonal liberation, or karma, which means reward-seeking activity. It's a very interesting definition of karma. Karma, reward-seeking activity. I do this, I get that. Cause and effect. Or fruit of pursuits, selfish endeavors. Such activities are without ulterior motives and devoid of all desires besides the aspiration to bring happiness to Krishna. That's interesting. When you say anyabhi lashita shunyam, shunyam means absolutely empty, devoid of any other anya, any other abhilash desire. Oh, okay, then you just become a Buddhist. You just become a Mayavadi, emerge. So he's saying, oh, wait a minute, don't clean your slate completely. Keep one desire, the aspiration, desire to bring happiness to Krishna. So all these definitions are very nice. They're individual because these are individual devotees that are practicing or realized whatever they've realized, and so they're sharing, they're mixing the realizations. And because Sanskrit is like that, Sanskrit words have so many meanings, and the meanings, and because these verses are actually shabda, they're transcendental, coming from the heart of Rupa Goswami and Lord Chaitanya, then so many meanings can be taken, but they're all basically saying the same thing. So, are there any questions? Savisachan?
If Anya Vilash means all different desires, why then would Karma, Jnana, Yoga mentioned separately? Why Rupa Goswami mentioned them after Anya Vilash?
No, that's why when we get into the verse, you'll see that he's divided it into, there's two parts, there's a Srubh Lakshana and a Tatastha Lakshana. So, that's considered a Tatastha Lakshana. The actual primary characteristic is Anukulyena Krishnanu, that we should just act favorably for Krishna, and that should be our only thought and consideration. And that's like the primary definition of Uttam Bhakti. And the secondary, oh, by the way, no other, and so we're already doing that. And then, because sometimes what happens is someone is doing bhakti to please Krishna, but then they're attached to their position in the Varnashram Dharma. So then they mix karma in it. For example, someone's born a Brahmin, and they become a Vaishnava, a follower of Lord Chaitanya. And they think, oh, you know, I was raised a Brahmin. If I don't do my morning anik, or if I don't do some ritual, then this, according to the Dharma, Varnashram Dharma, Dharma means karma, or actions, according to, which means prescribed duties. Prescribed duties means actions according to what Varna or Ashram you're in. I'm a Brahmin. I have to do this particular action. If I don't do this, then I'll incur sin. Because it's, Varnashram Dharma is nothing but piety and sin, and piety and pop. They follow these activities and don't get involved with pop. That's what Varna is all about, Varnashram. So he's afraid, if he has fear that if I don't do this, I'll get sin. So then his bhakti is mixed with some karma. Because he's attached, he has fear, and he's attached, oh, I'm a Brahmin, if I don't do this, then I'll be punished, or I'll go to hell, or I'll lose my brahminical status. So he's attached more to his Varna than he is to pleasing Krishna. Because the guru might say, you know, he's doing so many rituals before he does his, say, anik. He does pranayama for 10 minutes, then he does all these mudras, then he purifies his upavita. It takes like 30 minutes of preparation before he does actually chants his anik. Anik means Kam Gayatri, whatever, Brahma Gayatri, whatever. And then his Gurudev, he's in Gaudiya Sampradaya, he says, look, just do your Gayatri, then, you know, do dress Thakurji or whatever, do your seva. So, oh no, I have to do this. You know, I'm raised like this. You know, if I don't do this, you can't do your Brahma Gayatri unless you do this or that. So he's more attached to the karma within Varnashram than the order of Guru, which is bhakti or some limb of bhakti. So that's why Rupa Goswami is mentioning this, because many times people they carry these attachments to karma again. I mean, we're all like that. We have so many different things that we're attached to. So he wants to specify so he doesn't leave anything. Just in case someone says, oh, I'm always desiring to serve Krishna and I'm doing all these mudras and everything for Krishna. Mm-hmm. But then you find out, oh, that in Rag Marga, well, these mudras, they're a distraction from the pleasure of Krishna. It's like when Krishna wants to have bhoga, and then you come in and then you cook something nice and it's hot and it's fresh and it's smelling, steaming nice, and you bring it in. Say, wait a minute, Krishna, you got to do 15, you know, this mudra, that mudra, and purify the dravya and this and that. And he's like, come on, man. And he's looking at Radharani. What's going on with this guy? I mean, he's trying to entertain us with all his hand gestures. We want to eat. You know. So, you know, just give us a Tulsi leaf and let's go. You know, he's so absorbed. Oh, he's absorbed. Look how cool I am, you know. I know this mudra and that mudra. And he's not thinking, because he's lost the concept of the pleasure of Krishna. He's attached to it. He likes it. It gives him satisfaction. He feels satisfied to do those things. And then the bhakti is lost. So these are the type of things that people carry with them very much.
So Anya Vilash means selfish desires, and Jnana Karma is kind of strict following to a certain.
Because Anya Vilash Shunya means, in one sense, because that's the Tatastha Lakshana. Because the main thing is, if you're only desiring to favorably serve Krishna, everything is included. Mm-hmm. You know, but until we come to that point, until we come to that pure desire, that pure mentality, then we'll be carrying these other things, so many other desires, and then plus karma and jnana, these attachments, because we may think, oh, other desires, we may think other desires mean sinful desires or something outside of varna and ashram. Mm. Anya Vilash, we may misinterpret. Because if he doesn't say that, oh, I'm doing everything within the codes of Varna Dharma and Ashram Dharma. So I don't have any other desire. I'm just following the Varna. But then, so that I don't have any Anya Avilash, because he may misinterpret if someone is left to their own and they don't put the karma there. And they continue following, they still have so many desires attached to their particular Varna or Ashram. So he wants to show, hey, careful. No, this has to be eliminated also. Mataji?
More the difference, not the difference, but the concept of the pleasure of Krishna, right? And then there's also what we like to do, right? So I'm thinking in terms of, let's say, I don't want to make garlands for my deities because I would rather spend the time reading Shastra.
Right, right.
You know, so I would like to understand this concept in terms of that kind of thinking, because we understand what Krishna likes through, because we've gotten so many instructions from Guru and Sadhu and Shastras and everything. But then there's been our innate tendency, we actually like to do certain things. You know, somebody really likes to cook and they're really excited about cooking.
Well, the real, bhakti, that's the beauty of bhakti, because bhakti includes everything. As long as, once the consciousness is adjusted, practically everything can be filtered through that consciousness, practically every activity. Our sleeping is bhakti, our passing stool is bhakti, our taking bath is bhakti, because everything we're doing, he's trying to adjust our psyche here. This verse is trying to adjust our psyche and our mentality. Our expressions of our mentality or psyche can be multivarious or unlimited, practically speaking. And the guidelines is, we know the general framework of what are the activities that please Krishna. And we may be doing a very specific activity, which is clearly bhakti, but if our consciousness or mentality is not adjusted to that proper point, it is not very high class bhakti. You know, it's all mixed up, you know, with this karma and jnana and so many things. So the most important thing, we can do the simplest thing or the most complicated thing, and the liking part, it's okay to if our liking is, basically what you're saying is, I like to please Krishna. I mean, this is as long as you're, because favorable attitude means, I like to please Krishna, and I'm liking to please Krishna in this way. And I'm doing this for Krishna. I'm not cooking all these offerings. Like I knew one Baba, Gadadhar Das Baba, who this Govardhan Srila came from him. It was in Radhadamodar for 200 years, and he had it. And then he gave it to Lokshanya, and then he gave it to me. So I used to meet with him sometimes in Shingarbat. He's not here now anymore. But he used to live sometimes at Radhadamodar when I was staying there. He would spend Kartik there. And he would, at 12 o'clock at night, he would start cooking a huge feast. He had several Govardhan Srilas. This one, he was cooking for this one, other ones. And I would sometimes hear a bunch of, you know, stoves going, shh, those kind of funny gas stoves that make that kerosene or whatever, you know, shh. And I'd wake up or something in my room, and when I first heard, what's that, shh, you know, it's 12 o'clock at night. So then I went outside Prabhupada's room, and I looked up, because he was living by the deities on the side room up there at that time. And I said, Baba, and I said, then I came to know what he was up to about. I said, what are you doing? He said, oh, you know, Rasa Leela is going on, you know, Nidibhan, I have to make some big feast for them, you know. I said, okay, you know, he was really on another level. I never saw him sleep, and he's always in kirtan, and he has so many disciples. He was quite a good, you know, great devotee, Gadadhar Das Baba. He wasn't a pundit, but he was a Baba, or a devotee. And so he would just be up, and he'd be singing, and just it was just in his own. He was in his own Bab. He was just in his own Babas. There was nobody there, just him, and you know. So I just came and said, okay, good, well, I'll go back to my bhav. Deha, it's called deha bhav. It means absorption in the body. And then the next morning, he's offered everything. Then he's calling all the kids in the neighborhood and all these, you know, ladies, widow ladies, you know, ladies wearing white and stuff. And he's calling everybody, come on, take prasad. It was big utsav. You know, and he was cooking like every 3-4 days having these big feasts. And what was happening was, then I started to take closer observation of what the scene was. Yeah, I guess there was disciples or something. All these widow ladies and different people did, like old, you know, Babas, mostly ladies were doing. They were going out here and there collecting vegetables and begging in the market. And they would come and just drop off in front of his kutir, all kinds of vegetables. And whatever they would bring every few days, he would just cook everything up. You know, he cook huge prasadam, many, many items. And always blissful and always in the name. And that, so that was like some bhav that he was up all night cooking nice feasts for Radha and Krishna to take in Nidivan. And then distributing this Ras Lila prasadam every morning to all the lucky kitties and Swami's hanging around at Prabhupada's room. I used to be in his room. He used to come in, "Hey, Baba, wake up!" Because he always thought I was sleeping. I guess it's probably true, but he was hitting it. "Hey, Jago, you know, he's Bengali. "Jago, hey, Prasad, you know, Giriraj Prasad." He didn't have any teeth. "Giriraj Prasad." You know, I said, "Thank you, Baba." He had his head was a little bent like this because he's old. Yeah, he's a little old. "Giriraj Prasad, take it." I can't forget. So it's like this. So the idea is that you're thinking, "Krishna, I want to please you in this way." And I know, and I already know from my guru has taught me, and by my own bhajan, by chanting, I've realized that this is pleasing to you, and please accept this offering. And then that's it. You just read all day or whatever you do. It's like once I was talking with Anantadas, and he was writing at his little desk. He was upstairs sitting down. I mean, he was sitting on, like, you know, sitting down. Years ago, and he's writing, and I came in. I said, "Baba, you're always writing, you know." "You're always writing and studying." He said, "Yes, this is my bhajan." He said, this is also bhajan. You know, I mean, I was chanting so much, but, you know, he was studying and writing notes or lectures or books, whatever. You know, he's writing. He said, "This is my bhajan." So the idea, he's pleasing Krishna in this way. So, just like I have a garden and I get flowers. And I'm too lazy to make garlands. And like when you talked about that point, I thought, "Oh, wow, it sounds like we're in the same." And so you see all those flowers there. You can make a few garlands over there. But the Swami's too lazy. I said, "Giriraj, I hope you don't mind. You know, I hope I don't disqualify from Gopi Bhav because, you know, mandris are always stringing garlands and stuff. But I do in my manasi some garlands. But, I, you know, just here you go. Have these flowers and, you know, maybe Radharani will string some for you. I want to study and chant and, you know." But the devotee... When you get to a certain point in devotion where you realize that Krishna is accepting me. You know, it's like when you first get married or you have some intimate relationship with someone, it's a little nervous in the beginning. You don't know where, don't want to step on the other person's shoes, and then after a while the two bodies become one body, and the two minds become one mind, and the two hearts become one heart. Sometimes. Ideally, let's say. In the ideal husband, wife, boy, girl, whatever relationship. So this is what happens between Bhakta and Bhagavan, between the devotee and his Ishta, that the two bodies become one body, and the two hearts become one heart, and the two minds become one mind. And so then you know, you don't have any doubt. "Oh, gee, should I be doing this now, or maybe I'm doing that now?" And then that your bhava becomes to this extent that you know you're sitting pretty, as they say. You know that Krishna, you feel it. Not only you know it, you realize it. In other words, you know if someone loves you. You don't have to take a meter and measure it or put them on a scale and weigh it. So you can perceive that, yes, Krishna's happy with me. Krishna's pleased with me. This is bhakti. Bhakti is alive. The bhakti is Radharani, is a living spiritual energy. Life is spiritual, not dead. Dead matter. The body is animated because the whole universe is animated because spirit is there. So bhakti is nothing but Surab Shakti. That means Krishna. So it's alive. So if you're, it's like just going from one flower to another. Flowers are all giving nectar. So one service to the other is pleasing to Krishna. Is that, you know, at this stage. Is that okay? I think we'll stop now. So tomorrow we'll have the next class.